throw balls far. You want good words? Data language.
Talk real sports with a real man.
Come after me! I'm a man! I'm 40!
And now, here's the be-all, end-all, know-it-all of high school, college, and pro sports. Aaron Skinny Kalk with The Skinny on Sports.
We're talking about practice, man. I'm the MVP.
Good Friday morning out there, Western Oklahoma. Welcome to The Skinny on Sports right here on 98.1 FM, The Sports Animal. It is a financial Friday with Scott Garrison of Garrison Financial. He's in the house to talk about all kinds of different things that are in the world of sports. So we'll get to him right off the top of the show. Other things, ESPN.com, the lists are coming fast and furious just a couple of weeks before college football. Today's list, college football underachievers. I think we can all sit around here and name a couple. And by the way, they're on the list. We'll go over that. The Field of Dreams game last night, it's such a cool idea. It's such a neat thing. Extra coolness was added this year with Ken Griffey Jr. and Sr. kind of reenacting the last scene of Field of Dreams where the son and the dad have a catch out on the field. That's so cool. The unis were awesome. What's coming next? It feels like this thing, it's not played out yet, but it's going to get there. So what next? What other cool things could happen for baseball? We're going to ask that question a different way to Scott, too, about his sport. What would be a cool equivalent of that? So I gave him a little bit of a sneak peek on one of the questions I've got to ask him after he asks us some stuff that I know he's going to. 225-9698 is the phone or the text line. 225-9698. Give us a call. Shoot us a text. We'll talk about any of those things, whatever else might be on your mind. Feel free to chime in at 225-9698. If you're going to be outside the listening area, you can stay in touch with the show a couple of different ways. Log on to KADSAM.com or download the app. The Paragon app is free, and it's got everything. Three radio stations, the Penny News, Big Elk TV and Paragon TV, both coming on air 2 weeks from today with the Elks and Altus. Hollis will have Wilson in town, and then Merritt plays their opener the week after that on September 2nd. So the high school sports are here. We've already had some softball on BigElkTV.com. The Elk City softball boosters are doing those games, every single one of them. Matter of fact, they'll have two today with the Hobart tournament. I think they play Mangum and Cordell at 6 o'clock and 7:30, I believe, are the game times there. So you can check out Elk City Fast Pitch Softball, which is 3-0 by a combined 30-1 score at their festival earlier this week. Also, the Skinny on Sports podcast, if you missed the show entirely, you can go back and check that out, KADSAM.com, or you can also check that out on iTunes. If you do the iTunes route, subscribe, and you will be alerted when a new podcast drops. Jared, you're all energied up.
I'm energied up.
You know, it's a lot more quiet in my office from 8 o'clock to 9 o'clock when you fill in on the energy show for Sean.
What does that mean?
That's a compliment. You're not as loud as him.
Not as loud.
Not as loud.
Okay.
Maybe not as opinionated, as boisterous.
I try not to be.
Which will probably keep us on the air. You don't have near the opinions that he does.
I just the facts. That's all I do. I try to keep opinions.
Speaking of the facts.
Yes.
Speaking of the facts, after I left last week and I was not here to defend myself.
Oh yeah.
Somebody was talking about play practice and some habits that they might have learned or picked up at play practice.
It wasn't.
Carla Garrison, Mom, if you're listening, I had nothing to do with Aaron learning how to smoke a cigarette.
No, it was not Scott.
Absolutely nothing to do with Skinny lighting his first cigarette.
Yeah, that is exactly right. It was not Scott. Matter of fact, any other parents of a male back then, it wasn't even a male. It was female that taught me how to do that.
Someone's
wow.
little
you really
princess.
Were learning a lot. Seventh grade, hanging out with a senior and lighting a
couple
cigarette.
Of them.
Someone's
couple
princess.
Of seniors actually.
Wow.
But I can't. I wish I could remember what they called the. Leave the Susan Powell. Go to Pioneer, and then take off, and go from Pioneer and Country Club, a mile north, all the way back to the east of Washington, then come down Washington back into town. They called it something. Those two ladies called that trip.
Now he's road tripping with two senior girls.
Yeah, the smoker's mile.
This guy, he really had some
like
game in junior high. Man.
Wow. Oh, goodness.
It's impressive.
Yeah, I will not reveal.
It wasn't one of Sizemore's, like, 18-inch long Virginia Slims, was it?
No, I think they were Marlboro Lights, if I remember right, in a box.
Okay.
If okay. I remember right, I will just...
The debauchery in
we were
Elk
in
City
a,
in the late 90s. What's going on
What was
on
that
here?
Vehicle? It was red, four-door sedan.
Oh, red. Man.
What did they call those? It was Chevrolet, like the cool one back then.
I don't know. Big back seat?
Yes. I was all alone back there, though.
Oh.
Okay.
Not often does...
The two in the front seat were trying not to smoke me out in the back. So they,
gotcha. I gotcha. You want to hammer me with a question first? Or maybe we should move into sports and finance.
Yeah,
should we do that?
Let's go there before we get somebody in trouble.
I just envision Skinny like the movie Dazed and Confused. You're the kid
yes.
that they
oh,
bring
wow,
under his wing, you know, and he's hanging out. That's what I'm seeing here. You're in the
it
back
was.
Seat.
And that
did
was
you
the last time he had hair, too, in seventh grade.
You didn't go around bashing mailboxes, did you? Or have a no. bowling ball or nothing like that.
No, I was
okay.
too buzzed when I got out of there. I just stumbled up the hill back to our house.
Oh, man.
All right, what you got for us today, Scotty?
Okay, so today, not as much of a fun topic, but a little bit more of a serious topic. Also, I got a neighbor that owned a sports collectible shop in San Diego, California
oh, wow.
for like 30 years. And
wow.
I'm going to see if I can get him to maybe come in and talk to us a little bit about some of that collectible stuff. So I'm going to holler at him and maybe we can get him in here in the next couple of weeks to do that. Anyway, today we are talking about something that we've seen start to benefit this city and that I would like to see benefit this city a lot more and see expand. How much money do you think nationwide estimate of youth sports revenue
oh my gosh.
For last year? No, excuse me, not even last year. For 2017, because I couldn't even find. Well, I didn't take last year's or the year before because of COVID.
Right, right.
So 2017, how much revenue was nationwide for youth sports?
Are you talking about, let's put this, break this down. Are we talking like?
All youth sport. We're talking about all the way up till they get out of to collegiate level.
So.
Okay. Like buying a ticket at the gate, spending money at the concession, buying shoes. Is that what we're talking about?
We're not talking about shoes. We're talking about sports gates. We're talking
okay.
about things like that.
Okay.
Yep.
Well, I know how
tournament revenues,
my family with
tournament
buying all that
revenues.
Stuff.
Okay, so yeah. just at the field, not necessarily
right.
economic impact of
well,
the city.
In a household. Correct. But
okay, just
correct.
In a household. How much do parents spend on youth sports, essentially?
Yeah. Oh.
It's going to be astronomical.
Hundreds of millions of dollars would be my guess.
How about 19 billion?
Billion.
With a B.
Believe it. Gosh. Absolutely believe it. Doesn't shock me.
19 billion. $19 billion. There's a company called Sports Facilities Companies, and they have several facilities all around the country and in humongous cities, obviously. They have $15 billion worth of, we were talking about a $400 million stadium for,
right.
for the Thunder. They have $15 billion worth of complexes for youth sports, and they're planning to build another $3 billion in the next 2 years.
Holy Moses.
And this doesn't include city-owned facilities. This is just one company.
Wow.
Okay? So the reason why we need to talk about this, and the reason why we need to recognize what this has already done for Elk City, there's still people that complain and moan about the turf that we put in to the softball fields
mm-hmm.
and
right.
the baseball fields. Has anybody ever gone out there on any one weekend all summer long and seen the vehicles?
We're out there.
Skinny and I are out there almost every weekend.
Almost every weekend.
And season, yes.
You know what? I'll even give people, if you don't want to drive out there, okay, don't drive out there and look at it. But I will challenge you on a summer Saturday night, if you don't want to see what it looks like at the fields, go try to get a bite to eat at any
Amen.
Restaurant in this town.
Amen.
It's a wait. You have to wait to get into restaurants here, which is a great thing. I am not griping at whatsoever, but it's every one of them. Every restaurant where you can go in and sit down and have a meal, and on a summer Saturday night, it is packed. And it's not because a whole bunch of new people moved in for the weekend. Well, they kind of did. It's because of what's going on out at the five place.
They moved in for the weekend.
That's right.
It's one of my favorite things to do after a long day of playing all day on Saturday, a tournament, and then me and a couple other families and kids like, let's go down to that restaurant we like to go to. And yes, we're waiting, but then we get in. We're having it's a social thing, and it's fun.
And you're not sweating.
Yeah, you just get in there.
In a parking lot.
Just, hey,
eating a sandwich.
Down. But, yeah.
I mean, there's not a better cold beer in life than leaving that.
Amen.
Than leaving that the fiveplex at about 6:30 on a 110-degree day.
Yeah. So,
and sitting down and having one.
Yeah.
It's unbelievable. And so the city, you know, I know that there's talk about a new soccer complex. Mm-hmm. We're talking about doing basically the same thing as what we did with the baseball and softball. We got these basketball, you know, the new facility with the basketball courts that's coming in. And people need to recognize, you know, we're perfectly centrally located between Woodward, Guymon, Altus, Clinton,
Amarillo,
Weatherford, Amarillo.
Yeah.
You know, we're in a fantastic position to capitalize off of this incredible industry, and that's what it is. It's not little league t-ball for your kids anymore.
No.
This is an industry. This is bringing in incredible tax revenue to our city, which is going to help us with a lot of the problems that we haven't been able to address for a long time, the water problems, the streets, the things like that. Mm-hmm. And folks, just get behind it. Help us out. Help us make this city great.
Yeah, I mean, honestly, soccer is the last one because, as you said, the basketball's here. I don't think people understand what that's going to do. I ask anybody that's got a, what, fourth to seventh or, heck, all the way up into high school aged kid where they're going through the summertime to play basketball.
Yeah.
All over the joint. Now you have a chance to have some of that right here. You know, that's it's just
and
an awesome thing.
And talking about bringing soccer into the mix, you know, you're looking at you go to Woodward. Woodward has an incredible youth soccer program. We've got some really great guys that are starting to build up the youth soccer program here. But you take a look, Guymon is one of the largest. It might be the largest 5A school in the state of Oklahoma.
Mm-hmm.
I'm pretty sure it's close. And Altus, big school. And large Hispanic communities, and soccer is huge, and soccer can we need to do it.
Well, just look 20 miles to the east.
Yes.
Everyone says Clinton and football, but here lately they've been bringing home more gold balls and silver balls in soccer than football, and that's because of that community and that community.
All right, get ready, my big elks are coming.
Has embraced it, yeah. But to your point, yes, that people like to gripe all the time, but you don't know what you got until you don't got it. And I've got friends who are in Oklahoma City. Their daughter plays softball. She's a sixth grader now on a travel team. And it was about a year ago, fall league. They came out here for a tournament. And they were like, we didn't know you guys had this out
from
here.
From Oklahoma City.
This is one of...
We brought people in from Oklahoma City to come here.
They didn't realize, like, oh, we got to go to Elk.
And it happens every week.
They called me, hey, we're coming your way. We're coming out there. And I could hear the hesitation in their voice, like, we're coming to Elk City. We got to drive out to Elk City. They got here and they saw it. It's like, Jared, we're a travel team. We've been to a lot of places. This is up there. This facility is up there. And I was like, I told you on the phone. Why don't you believe me? You guys are smarter than me. You're lawyers. You should know. But I'm telling you, I'm not lying to you.
But that's the truth, though. Once you get here, people, and not only do they don't just come once and go, ah, it's back. All of a sudden, you start seeing the Panhandle socks, which is out. You know, that's not Oklahoma; it's Texas.
And they look forward to, like,
that's right.
They come here and like, man, and then they see it on their schedule the next. Oh, all right, we get to go to that tournament in Elk City. That is a great place to go. Plus,
yeah,
they got great food.
And listen, and soccer is it needs to happen because it's the last one of those youth sports with the baseball and the softball. The basketball is now there. You know, football is one of those things that doesn't really compute a lot around here as much as some other places with, they don't Pop Warner and all that when they're young. It's more of a school, junior high was when it really gets going, at least here in this town. I'm 100% agreeing. Soccer, it's kids play.
Yeah.
They outgrow it, but you know they do play.
They don't outgrow
it. That's all right. So now I referenced the Field of Dreams thing last night in Iowa, the second year that Major League Baseball has been there. What is the soccer equivalent to, say, a field? Like, so an MLS game, or, you know, where would they go to try to recreate what that movie has done for baseball?
See, you bring up – I mean, it's just not even fair. You're not even being fair. You're bringing up the minor league of soccer.
Okay.
You ask me a question like
okay,
that, and then you say the MLS. I mean, why don't you say football in Germany – American football in Germany, what's the equivalent?
Well,
I mean, come on, man.
I wanted to keep it American, but I guess it could be worldwide. Okay, let's have Man U and Man City play somewhere. Where would be a cool to try to sort of recreate that?
I don't really know. The big thing in soccer is the World Cup.
Right.
And unfortunately, and that's something that that's another topic that I'm working on, is corruption in sports. Mm-hmm. And that's not just going to be the World Cup. We're going to talk about the Olympics. I mean, you want to talk about some unbelievably corrupt things that have gone on with cities that have hosted the Olympics, including the United States. Hey, Utah got into a lot of trouble when they hosted. I mean, they did a lot of shady stuff to get the Winter Olympics to come there. So that's one of the things that we're going to talk about. But, the World Cup is just such an incredible thing. People have no idea. When that was here in the United States in 94, we're talking about it probably brought in $1 billion to the United States when it was here in 94. And here's the best part of it, guys. All of those stadiums were already built.
That's right.
Mm-hmm.
They didn't have to do anything
right.
for facilities. So that's why people want it. I mean, Qatar is building an entire new God knows how much money Qatar is spending on this. I don't really know why they're doing it. But nothing like running. The average professional soccer player runs 9 miles in a game, and nothing like running 9 miles when it's 110 degrees.
World Cup is coming back here in, what, 26? It's the next one,
I believe.
I think
so.
Yeah.
The next one.
Yeah.
You know, that's something that people don't think about. But there's only a certain amount of places that are already equipped to do these types of things with facilities. And obviously the United States is one of those. With the stadiums and what they can use, not only the soccer stadiums that have been built since then, but obviously the football and multi-purpose facilities that are everywhere. I mean, every state in the union has at least one of them. Able to spread that around a little bit more than a lot of places. Okay, now you're a golfer.
I am a golfer.
Did you see?
I'm not any good, but I am.
That's okay.
Well, then we need to go together.
Did you see what happened yesterday between Scottie Scheffler and Cam Smith?
I did not see it.
Okay, so Cam Smith, it's been widely reported this week that he will take the LIV Golf Millions, 100 of them, if the reports are true. But because he hasn't officially announced that, and the signing isn't official, he still gets to play in the FedEx Cup chase. He's the leader of it. They're right up there toward the top. And so, you know, there was the big lawsuit last week. Judge said no to those three guys, Gooch and Hudson Swafford and Matt Jones. Nope, you can't play because you're already contracted with LIV. Cam's not that yet, I guess, so he gets to play. So yesterday in the first round, they're both playing together. Scottie Scheffler, he didn't walk in his line, but he walked between Cam's coin and Cam, bent down behind, kind of like reading the putt.
Ooh.
People were up in arms.
Ooh.
On both sides of this.
Yeah.
What say you?
I mean, I believe Scheffler's come out more than once and really been – he's really against the
– yes.
He's with Tiger. They're both really anti-LIV golf. Ooh. I mean, that he wouldn't have done it if – yeah.
I don't think so. I mean, and he did not even make any reaction. He just walked right by and never turned around and looked, said, sorry, nothing.
Right, right.
Just walked by and kept going.
Immediately looked for
and
it.
Cam went.
Looked right at his face. Yeah.
Yeah.
Smith's face.
And
funny.
Yeah, knew what he was doing and also knew it because he knew he wasn't going to walk on his line.
Mm-hmm.
Wow. I need to watch the video from this.
It's pretty awesome. And golf is in a weird spot here because while Tiger isn't officially done, he's done.
Yeah,
maybe a bolt of lightning once a couple years, but he's done as
don't,
far as
don't
carrying.
Make any bets like Traber did.
That's right.
But you're going to end up.
it'd be a good time to do it now, but what I'm saying is he's carried that thing on his back since he announced Hello World in 1996, mm-hmm. and golf is needing something besides him because, you know, we talk about what moves the needle in sports. He is the needle in golf, and they're going to lose that here pretty quick. This is an awesome development because it feels like Jared, we talked about it yesterday, like the WWE and WCW back in the 90s, like the late 90s,
yeah,
and all, like just have a great rivalry between these two things to drum up interest that they're going to be losing when Tiger's gone.
That would be interesting if there was one or two competitions a year between the two.
And especially if they have this much spite already.
Oh, my gosh.
I love it.
Oh, man.
I love it. Hey, tell everybody how they can get a hold of you for their financial needs.
Yeah, come on down and see me. I'm right there on the corner of 3rd and Main, 124 North Main, Garrison Financial, and we'll fix you up. We'll go over all kinds of things. Just come in. We'll talk about your specific planning and what you'd like to accomplish, your goals, your dreams, and what keeps you up at night.
All right, Scott. Scott at SoonerWealth.com as well. They can shoot you an email there.
That's correct.
Garrison Financials. It's a Financial Friday with Scott Garrison. Amen. Thank you. Appreciate it.
All right.
I am noticing.
How come I don't have like, ole? I mean, you need like a play-in thing.
I just saw the first promo on Fox last night during the game for the World Cup, and I was like, it's time. It's August, but it's coming in November. We're going to have to do something special for Scott. We'll be back.
Hello, my name is Scott Garrison. You may remember me as Scott the Barber or just as Ron and Carla's son. I've been involved in our community since opening Scott's Barbershop on the southeast corner of 3rd and Main in 1998. Now I'm back in the same building as Garrison Financial. I started investing in my 20s. I invested through the dot-com crash and the Great Recession. I started caring for other people's money in 2018, and I truly enjoy sitting down with my clients, understanding their wants and needs, as well as what keeps them up at night. Whether my friends just want me to invest a little of their savings or want me to work with their tax and legal professionals to strive towards optimal efficiency, we can do it all. I believe communication is key to helping my clients reach their goals. For if we are faithful over a few things, we shall be given more. Contact me at scott@soonerwealth.com. Securities offered through registered representatives of Cambridge Investment Research, Inc., a broker-dealer member FINRA and SIPC. Advisory services offered through Cambridge Investment Research Advisors, Inc., a registered investment advisor. Garrison Financial and Cambridge are not affiliated. This communication is strictly intended for individuals residing in the states of Colorado, Nevada, Oklahoma, and Texas. No offers may be made or accepted from any resident outside the specific states referenced. Cambridge does not offer tax and legal advice.
The Skinny on Sports.
Welcome back. Skinny on Sports, 98.1 FM, the sports animal. Thank you to Scott Garrison for stopping by. Financial Friday with Scott. Man, he can do it all. Full financial planning. He'll shop the open market to bring you the best value on life insurance and investments. Can manage your investments or even charge you hourly. That's a cool thing. He'll charge you hourly to help you build a plan that you can manage. And a lot of people like to do that throughout the day, watching the markets, checking different things out with all the things that are going on financially. He can help you do that and set you up to be able to manage those yourself. Shoot him an email. It's scott@soonerwealth.com. Visit him there on the southeast corner of 3rd and Main right here in Elk City. What did you think about Cam Smith and Scotty Scheffler's little kerfuffle?
Well, obviously you take the LIV and PGA thing out of it. It's an unspoken rule. You don't do it. That's the game. It's the nature of the game. You just don't do that. You have respect. It's a gentleman's game that you don't do. You don't do that. But when you add all that other stuff in there, you know, Scheffler strongly believes against the LIV and... And so, you know, whatever. I mean, he walked, to be clear, he walked between Smith and his marker, not the
right
line where the ball would
that's
be
right
going. So, you know, that's where, if I'm on a green, I'm looking at, you know, who's going to, if someone, you know, and you play with guys who just don't know that rule. And they walk through it, and I kind of have to stand up, and I kind of walk over and make sure there's no indention and, you know, stuff like that. But, so it wasn't as egregious as when I first saw it. I thought he walked through the actual line, but he didn't. He walked between. He was just, you know, getting a read. And And at the end of the day, I just laughed. I just laughed at it because I looked at Smith's reaction and then I looked at Scheffler and Scheffler. I was like, was that an accident? Oh, no. Because if it was, he would have went, oh, man, hey, I'm sorry.
Yeah, and turned he didn't back. Even turn
he
around.
He just walked. Cold Stone just kept going. And there we go. There it is. And I expect almost wanted to see Smith drop his putter and go over there and try to give him the people's elbow or something. I mean, does he get that WCW? WWE.
It would have been the perfect time for there to be like
loudspeakers
around, and like here
out
hear,
of nowhere he finds a chair.
Hear the glass shatter.
Yes.
Run over to the hospitality booth or tent and get a beer and start pouring it on the.
I get why Scheffler did it, and I get why Smith's upset, but it wasn't as egregious as I thought it could have been.
Well, and but
from the gentleman's side of it, you don't do that. You just don't do that.
Yeah, I mean, here's the deal. Even if he would have stepped in his line, it'd have been worse. But you know what? With the rules of golf now, he can just go up there and tap it back down. You can tap the green all the way from on the
That's
line
what I'm saying,
from your
yeah.
in, anymore. It's, used to, it'd have been spike marks in the way, and it would have affected his actual. Putt, but mm-hmm. Now it was obviously symbolic. It was obviously meant. I don't care what Scotty says later on down the line. If he tries to say, oh yeah, I was upset, and he might have been upset because I think he made a bogey on that hole to go to two over, and he wasn't playing very well, and he didn't play very well, and Cam whipped him, beat him by four shots in the same group. So maybe that's the ultimate revenge from Cam. But I love it. I love the animosity that's being created. You know, There were some guys, and a bunch of them have been outspoken. Obviously, Rory, JT, Scotty has been another one. Billy Horschel's getting in the mix. You know a guy that has never said anything in his 62 years and what 40-year career that has been amazingly outspoken over this has been Fred Couples. You've never heard Fred involved in anything, and man, it's like every other day. People are asking him what he thinks, and he's flat out telling you. You know, he came out yesterday talking about Greg Norman. And he's like, nobody's liked him for 25 years. I mean, just, you know, he's like almost like the perfect villain for LIV Golf. And a lot of those guys on the tour, the older guys on the tour especially, that were playing back with him, like, of course it's him. Of course Greg Norman's the one doing this because nobody likes him anyway. Like, he's not tarnishing anything. Because he never had anything, you know, as far as a relationship with those guys and friendships and all that kind of stuff. So it's been really, really interesting. And, you know, the more that the tour guys kind of galvanize, I think the stronger it makes LIV Golf. Because Scott is right, whoever said it, this would never have happened without this. Never. And it's almost given a little bit of credence to that tour that the PGA Tour guys are getting so mad about it. It's given them a little bit more. What's the word? Anyway, so it's exciting. I really think this could be. I think I mentioned this right when it all kind of started, but this could be the kind of the vehicle for golf to stay in the mainstream with Tiger exiting the stage because they have to have something.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe this is it. You know, the Ryder Cup gets all those, you know, patriotic emotions stirring, but it happens once every 2 years, and nobody cares about the President's Cup this summer. Nobody cares, or this fall, I mean. Nobody cares about that. So you get that once every 2 years feeling, you know, of a different type of sporting, like a football type of atmosphere or a basketball type of atmosphere. Maybe this can help keep this thing going, keep golf more in the mainstream as it has been ever since Tiger came along.
Yes.
So I thought it was awesome. All right, ESPN, the daily lists seem to be coming fast and furious as far as the ramp up for college football. Yesterday we talked about the top 25 most important players in the playoff chase as determined by Bill Connelly. Today, Adam Rittenberg has put out an article, and he's got the underachiever tiers of college football. Okay. So I think when I say underachiever, I think there's a couple of certain programs that pop into mind, especially around here, because one of them, a majority of people hate. Okay? And obviously that's Texas. Who does less with more? Nobody has more than Texas. And who does less with that than they do? So Adam has different tiers. Tier one, which in my mind would be the most underachieving team in the country, or the teams in the country at a tier. He's actually got one team all alone in tier one. Have you looked at the list?
I have, yes.
Would you have guessed it would be this one, number one?
Yes.
Number one all by themselves?
Absolutely.
Is the Texas A&M Aggies.
Yeah, I totally would put them there. And I got a lot of reasons why. And it's kind of self-inflicted, because they will tell you that they got all this tradition in all these quote-unquote championships, and that they are one of the best blue bloods of college football, but they haven't had a lot of true titles to show for it. Best example was, I guess there was a tweet that went viral where a recruit came to check out Texas A&M. They're showing him their trophy room, and he's walking around going, well, these are all for track and swimming, and where are their football trophies? So, yeah, I'd definitely put them up there. Now they're really, with the NIL stuff, really going all in. If that continues, I mean, you could almost need to create another tier for them. You're getting all these recruits, and then they could continue to lose to the Georgias and Alabamas and are on the outside looking in of the playoffs, and with no SEC titles to show for it. Yeah, that would be definition underachieving.
So since the Big 12 came into existence in 1996, the Aggies have won one conference title. And that was a massive upset win over Kansas State team that should have been playing for the national title in 1998. They should have been the team playing Tennessee in the first BCS title game.
Mm-hmm.
It should have been that. It wasn't, but it should have been. And Texas A&M was the reason in 1998. Since then, that's the only conference title they've won since the Southwestern Conference has been gone. They've lost four or more games 23 times since 1994. They haven't won a national title since 1939. Makes a lot of sense that they are number one. Now, here's the good news, Aggie fans.
But if you went in with, let's say, a blindfold on, you go in, picture this, you go into a room. You don't have to have a blindfold on. You go into a windowless room full of people wearing nothing but gray hoodies and sweatpants, okay? And they come up and told you who they root for. And they start spouting off all this stuff and da-da-da-da-da. And at the end of the day, go, okay, who's the most prestigious school? You're going to point at the Texas A&M fan with the way that they propel themselves. Does that make sense?
Oh, until you have to say, that's great. You've got all the resources in the world. You've got all this. You've got all that. What have you won?
Right.
Then when they start saying what they've won, they immediately get pushed to the back of the line.
Yeah.
You're not paying attention to them anymore.
But then it makes you think, well, wait, you told me all this, but how come you're not wearing, where's all the gold? Where are your trophies?
There aren't any. Now, here's the good news for Aggie fans. You know who number one was on this list last year?
I would guess their friends down the road.
No.
No. Who?
Georgia.
Oh, okay. Well, there's hope then.
Because Georgia hadn't won a national title since 1981. 80. They had only won three conference titles since 82. And 82 symbolizes the end of Herschel Walker, because they won in 80, 81, 82. Yeah, it was 80. You know, all 3 years they were SEC champs with Herschel Walker there. Since then, they had only won three SEC titles since 1982 and no national titles in 42 years until last year. So, you know, it's not like you can't get off this list. And quite frankly, if you're on it, it means you can get off it, at least at the top tiers, because you shouldn't be on it is the whole point. With all the things you have going for you.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, Texas A&M is number one. The second tier is comprised of three teams, one of which I think is just a tick unfair, but I get it for the other two. The LA schools and the Texas Longhorns. If you want to give me Texas and you want to give me UCLA, that's fine. I think it's a little unfair to USC to be on this list for one reason only: probation.
Yeah.
They went through probation in this period, you know, in the last decade and a half. You know, the 2000s were kind of SC's decade in a lot of ways. You know, they came back from oblivion, had almost won three national titles in a row. You know, if it wasn't for Vince Young, they would have. Now, I don't know if any of those would still be there, but they would have won them. And then, of course, Pete Carroll left when the posse started coming to town. And then they had the huge probation. And so, it's a little unfair to me that you put them in there because of that. But there's no doubt for a program that has been, that to me is one of the five blue bloods, USC's down period has lasted a little bit longer than maybe it should with all that tradition. But, you know, these three, the other two definitely belong on some kind of list like this.
Yeah, UCLA, UCLA is, to me, a basketball school. I thought you were going to say it's kind of unfair for them to be there.
No, because you know, they have everything.
Yeah,
and they can't put it together.
Yeah. You think Chip Kelly's the right guy for the job there?
You know,
it seems like he's kind of, that trajectory is kind of going up for him.
It
and
does
I think they're happy
like
with him. There's been, his seat is literally not hot. I think they're very happy where he's at, or with him, and where he's at, what he's doing. So, but that doesn't mean they're off this list, though.
No, they're still there.
And I could see why they're there, because of location. You know, it's something that's always baffled me, is you're UCLA, you're in Southern Cal, you're in a large market, you know, and they should have taken the opportunity to out-recruit USC.
That's right.
Because of their probation problem.
That's exactly right. UCLA should have jumped on the chance and been Oregon.
Yeah.
Instead, Oregon is the one that took advantage of USC's downfall in the probation. It should have been UCLA, and it's not. Think about this. UCLA has only finished in the top 25 three times since 1998. Are you kidding me? That doesn't even seem possible that stat is true, reading through this article. 1998 was a bad year to win the conference. It's the last time UCLA won the conference. And A&M won the conference. That was a bad year to be conference champs, right?
Yeah, there's a shift. There's a change from 98 to...
In 98.
To 99 and then 2000, yeah.
But see, from 82 to 93, USC won five Pac-10 titles, went to the Rose Bowl three times, and went to a Fiesta Bowl in that 11-year period. They had nine top 20 finishes, five top 10s. So to think about that, and then starting just 5 years later, only three top 25s, no Rose Bowls since 98, only two conference titles since 93, none since 98. That's the epitome of underachieving, especially when you're right there in Southern California, where you've been around all of that talent. Mm-hmm. And, of course, we all know about Texas. Texas hasn't won the Big 12 since 2009. They've only played for it once in 2018. One national title since 1970. They've only won the Big 12, what, three times? The inaugural in 96, 2005, and 2009. And only played, they lost to Colorado in 01, lost to Nebraska in 99. That's five years. Lost OU, I guess. So six.
Well, OU, yeah.
So six times since 1996 that Texas has been either the conference champ or played for a conference title. Yikes. And A&M makes them look good.
Now, there is a reason, it's easy to rip on Texas when you are a fan of OU or OSU because they're a rival. They are a rival. But there's a lot of bullets in that gun when you mention all of that. And that's why it makes it so easy sometimes. Like, man, they recruit great. They're doing it now. But everyone's still making those jokes like, yeah, you're recruiting great. Can you develop them? Can you win with them? Hasn't happened as of late. Shoot, hasn't happened in a decade plus. So they're very, very underachieving.
Tier 3, fading dynasties. I'm anxious to see what happens to one of these two teams, and I think it's appropriate now. But we both believe with the changes that are happening in college football, maybe one of these has a lot better chance to not be on this list than the other.
Yeah, one's going up, one's going down.
In theory. And definitely has the ability with things to go up. The one that seems like there's going to be a whole generation of people that have no idea. Almost already is a whole generation of people that have no idea this team was any good. And that is the Nebraska Cornhuskers. Guys like you and I that grew up when you and I, never, ever was it conceivable that Nebraska would not win a conference title in, 23 years now? The last one is 1999. They haven't won one this millennium.
Listen, kids, growing up, when you saw that red jersey and that N on the side of the helmet.
Which stood for knowledge, by the way.
When you saw that, it scared you. It scared me. It intimidated me just watching on. I was like, oh, there's Nebraska. Man, look at those guys. Man, Nebraska. Oh, boy. Nebraska's coming to town? Oh, boy. Of course, those were the dreadful 90s years in Norman. But you know what I mean? But a lot of schools saw Nebraska and went, oh, it's Nebraska. There was an intimidation thing there. Now it's, oh, Nebraska. Chalk it up as a W.
Nebraska finished outside the top 10 just once in the decade of the 70s. They finished no lower than 12th from 1970 to 1989. And then only outside the top 8 once from 93 to 2001. Miami finished in the top 3 in the AP 7 consecutive years from 86 to 92. They won, 4 national titles? 83, 87, 89, and 91. And then tacked on a fifth one in 2001 with that ridiculously talented team. By the way, beat Nebraska in the Rose Bowl that year in the BCS title game. I think Miami's...
What year was that again?
It was 2001 when they beat Nebraska in the title game.
Isn't that funny? Both those schools met for the title. And when I distinctly remember this too. When Miami won, I remember thinking this, Nebraska might not ever be the same. And they weren't. And the big change came when they went to the Big Ten.
Yeah. They were still a player in the Big 12, playing in the conference title game, just not winning it. Played in 06. They played in 09. You know, way more. You know, the ties to Texas that they had in the Big 12 really feel like when they were separated because of changing for the money in the Big 10. They lost two things. One, they lost the ties to Texas recruiting-wise because they're not going down there every year at least once. And two, they lost their rivalry.
Yeah.
They lost with OU. Yeah. And is it Iowa? Because here's the truth about Nebraska. There is no reason why that program shouldn't be at least Wisconsin in the Big Ten. At least Wisconsin.
Agreed.
With the history and the tradition. But here's the problem. That tradition is every bit of 20 years old right now. Nobody playing college football even knows who Eric Crouch was. And that wasn't even the heyday of Nebraska football.
No, it wasn't.
Does anybody know Tom Osborne that plays right now? And the problem for Nebraska is they're in Nebraska. Miami, on the other hand, they've got a chance to dig out of it because of NIL, because of the location of Miami. And we've seen that the people in Miami are willing to spend their money on the Hurricanes. They've already done it illegally.
Yes.
So I think Mario.
And on top of all that, I think, yeah.
Mario Cristobal.
Yeah.
You know, hearkening back to those days as a player for the U, as a guy that's a program guy, the U. He knows he was there and knows what it was like in those days. And so I think knows how to do it, how to get it back. And that starts with, you know, it was famous in that 30 for 30 when Howard Schnellenberger got the thing rolling. You cut off, they called it the state of Miami. Cut off the tip of Florida and don't let anybody get out of there because you've got enough high school players in that small geographic area to dominate college football. They've proven it. They've proven it twice. Mm-hmm. And so that's where, but those two similar fates, I think Nebraska was way more longstanding of a power in college football. Miami was more of a flash in the pan. And that probably, it probably even epitomizes what those two cities or states are all about. If you compare Miami to the state of Nebraska, the state of Nebraska feels like the tortoise and Miami feels like the hare. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. And there's no doubt that both can win at have been able to win at a shocking, staggeringly high level in college football. But I think both of us would agree Miami is way more likely to be able to do it again than what Nebraska is with the current state of it.
Absolutely. I agree.
After that, you get to a bunch of teams that nobody cares about with these tiers. League title lulls. You're talking about NC State, North Carolina, Minnesota, and Ohio. Those guys aren't scared of anybody. And then group of five teams. But I think, you know, those – I think Adam Rittenberg hit it right on the head. When you think about – if you just said, okay, who's been disappointing in college football for what – I think you get those six in anybody's top 10.
Agreed.
Underachieving anybody's. Maybe USC doesn't get there because of the probation. But if you really start digging into the numbers over the past 15 years, then – yeah, they're going to be that.
Now, just for the sake of bringing it local, do we consider OU underachieved because they haven't won a national title since 2000? Do we consider OSU underachieved because there's only been one Big 12 title in this century? I mean, you know, just to bring it back local, do we, I guess this as local fans would say yes, but those outside go, God, you got all those wins. OU's winning a lot of conference titles. It seems like OSU is on the cusp, and even if OU loses, OSU could be the king of this league, of this conference. I mean, just for sake of discussion, what do you think about that?
I think that you can make some arguments that way for sure. I mean, if you're going to judge by national titles, which I think a lot of OU fans, that's a successful season or not, mm-hmm. then sure. It's amazing what the difference of the outcome of one game did and has done for the perception of Bob Stoops. If Jason White's pass to Kewan Jones down in the Superdome is inches less, that's a tie game, probably going to overtime. You know, you win that one. You know, just that an extra title. You know, the game against Florida that Oklahoma had every chance to kind of run away and hide early, didn't get it done, and then lost to Tebow. You know, that changes things immensely in the national title conversation. Because now, I mean, it has. It's 22 years. Looks like good. You know, that drought doesn't look like it's ending this season. Of course, it didn't look like it was going to end in 2000 either, from dating back to 85. But when you look, I mean, yeah, this is the longest stretch. But the difference between, I think, Oklahoma is they've been there, and they're still winning. You know, you can put up numbers to counteract that argument. with, you know, the most wins since 2000 in college football, the, you know, all the conference titles, all the BCS title games, the BCS wins, da-da-da-da-da-da-da.
You know, when you get older, like,
you can counteract that.
When you get older, like me and you, and, you know, 10 years ago, it's frustrating to not have the net. Now it's like, well, goodness, they're winning 10-plus games every season and giving themselves a chance. And that's really, I guess, all you could ask for. You know, just give yourself a chance, and you never know how the cookie crumbles at that point. You know, I think eventually they'll break through. I'm not saying this year or next or even the next year, but they're going to continue to win at a high level. And I say a high level, the 10-plus games, and then maybe get in a conference title game and win it, then you never know what could happen. But that gives me solace, I guess, to not having national titles. At least there's chances year in, year out. There's always that hope. You know, now it's OSU. You know, that same thing. You know, no one gave them a chance last year to even be conference contenders.
Oh, I did. I had them in a conference championship game.
Let's beat your chest a little more. I didn't hear it on the mic.
I had it. No, once again, if you want to say conference championships, you've only had one? Yeah. In the Gundy era? Sure, that's disappointing in ways. But also, I mean, they're doing things that the program has never done consistently. The amount of 10-win seasons that he's had in his tenure there at Oklahoma State dwarfs the rest of the entire existence of the program. But
I mean, he is the most, fair to say, most successful coach in the program's history.
1,000,000%. Yeah. And it's not close. It's not close.
However, this is where the underachieving thing argument comes in. He's the most successful with only one conference title.
It is. You know, I think you also have the level of expectations, which have no doubt been risen in Stillwater from the time he got there to now. People are expecting way different results now than they were then. And they're getting them to a large degree, except for that. You know? Mm-hmm. Think about the difference 3 inches makes.
Yeah. I'm telling you. All right, moving on.
What are you
on.
Telling us?
Moving on. Come on. It's 5 more minutes left to go in this show.
It's Friday, though.
Yeah.
We'll be back to wrap it up.
Hello, my name is Scott Garrison. You may remember me as Scott the Barber or just as Ron and Carla's son. I've been involved in our community since opening Scott's Barbershop on the southeast corner of 3rd and Main in 1998. Now I'm back in the same building as Garrison Financial. I started investing in my 20s. I invested through the dot-com crash and the Great Recession. I started caring for other people's money in 2018, and I truly enjoy sitting down with my clients, understanding their wants and needs as well as what keeps them up at night. Whether my friends just want me to invest a little of their savings or want me to work with their tax and legal professionals to strive towards optimal efficiency, we can do it all. I believe communication is key to helping my clients reach their goals. For if we are faithful over a few things, we shall be given more. Contact me at scott@soonerwealth.com. Securities offered through registered representatives of Cambridge Investment Research, Inc., a broker-dealer member, FINRA, and SIPC. Advisory services offered through Cambridge Investment Research Advisors, Inc., a registered investment advisor. Garrison Financial and Cambridge are not affiliated. This communication is strictly intended for individuals residing in the states of Colorado, Nevada, Oklahoma, and Texas. No offers may be made or accepted from any resident outside the specific states referenced. Cambridge does not offer tax and legal advice.
The Skinny on Sports.
It's in the hole.
You know, Jared, I don't have a lot of regrets in life, but the one regret I do have is that I'm not able to sit out in my car and listen to the brilliance that I spew on the radio
live
each and every day. Like a lot of our listeners
yes.
are able to get to do.
I'm jealous of our listeners.
Yeah, here it is. So if you don't know what we're talking about, we're referencing Antonio Brown's statement. Here's Buffalo Wild Wings. My biggest regret is that I'll never be able to taste myself. Sure, I can watch other people enjoy my wings, but I can't imagine what that was like to taste all of my 26 sauces and seasonings for the first time.
Oh, man. Yeah, get ready for that this weekend. That's going to be all over the social medias.
He's trying to find exactly what he said.
Oh, it's sad. He said he doesn't regret, leaving in the middle of the game. He listed about 3 or 4 of his ill-advised actions. Read it.
Here he is. My biggest regret in my career doesn't involve calling my GM a cracker or showing up to Raiders camp late in a hot air balloon with frozen feet or throwing rocks at that UPS driver, and it definitely doesn't involve me taking my shirt off and doing a victory lap around the Jet Stadium mid-game while throwing up deuces. My biggest regret is that I'll never get to see me, Antonio Brown, play a game live. Sure, I can watch the game afterwards, but I can't imagine what that was like for you all to see something like that, like watching the Beatles or Jesus perform at Red Rocks.
See, first initial reaction, I laughed, and I sat and I soaked it in, and then I got sad. I feel sorry for him. He clearly has a mental illness, and I'm not making light of that. I think that was established a long time ago, too. He cannot comprehend. I think he has a mental illness.
Did you see Gerald McCoy yesterday?
If he doesn't have a mental illness, then it is hilarious, and he's an idiot.
He's just a narcissist,
yeah,
for sure.
Yeah, exactly.
You see Gerald McCoy yesterday?
No.
He's, man, I was for sure that AB quote was fake. Nope, all him, and just the cry laughing.
Wow. That's crazy.
You know,
that's crazy.
Another regret that I think we all have is that we're not able to be at Woodward today.
Yeah.
Be able to drive around and watch Sean play golf.
I almost texted you last night and said, how about you come give me a golf lesson tomorrow? I almost texted you that. I know you're done with payroll. You got a light day, don't you?
We can make what if our bosses are using the Paragon app at Boiling Springs? Do we admit this on the air?
I think we should set up some kind of a system like on Ferris Bueller's Day Off where it's like a dummy in our offices and door opens and it hits a button. It says, hey, go come in. I'm working. And make some clickety sounds. And
or we could just have Casey do it.
Casey, cover for us.
Yeah. Hey, by the way, wrap up the week here. Big round today for Quade Cummins, former Weatherford star, two-time state champion, played at OU. He is on the Corn Ferry Tour. He is currently tied 20th. This is the last regular season tournament on the Corn Ferry Tour. Here's the deal. He's got to finish inside the top 75 to secure his Corn Ferry Tour card for next year. Also get into the Corn Ferry Tour playoffs, which could possibly earn him a PGA Tour card. And quite frankly, right now he sits in 59th, started the week at 67th. So making the cut and a good showing will secure that. But there's also a chance he's only three off the lead right now. He hadn't started today. He tees off this afternoon. He shot 3-under yesterday. The lead is now 6-under with the second round underway. There's also the possibility that he could move up into the top 25 with a great weekend. Philip Knowles, for instance, Philip Knowles came into the week 87th on the points list, so 20 spots behind Quade. He would be 17th right now because he's one of those guys tied for the lead. So if Quade really plays well this weekend, it's not out of the realm of possibility that not only does he secure a Corn Ferry Tour card, he could actually jump up in the top 25 and be on the PGA Tour starting next year, or heck, starting in a couple of weeks with that wraparound season going. So a big weekend for Quade. I think making the cut, which right now he's at 3-under, the cut's at 1-under. So making the cut ought to be enough for him to secure that Corn Ferry Tour card. Mm. If he doesn't, probably be chewing fingernails all weekend to see who's where. But, you know, another good round today. Shoot another 3-under, it'd be 6-under, toward the top of the leaderboard. He actually, last Friday, he ended up making like three birdies in the last four holes to make the cut, and then shot 7-under on Sunday to move up into a top 30 position, which really helped him. He went into last week like 73rd, comes into this week 67th, now stands 59th on the Corn Ferry Tour list. So it's that's probably job one in his mind, is to make sure you secure that for next year, but then play great this weekend, and who knows, we might get your first win and also earn your PGA Tour card all in the same fail swoop here for Quade. So a big day today for Quade. Good luck to him. Just go out and play his game, and he ought to be just fine to wrap up that Corn Ferry card and then start maybe on Saturday and Sunday then press your luck a little bit. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
To try to vault up that board and maybe see if you can't get in the top two or three and where that falls at the end of the weekend. So that'll be cool to watch this weekend for a guy from just down the road over there in Weatherford.
Yes, very cool. So we'll have that.
Yeah, we'll tell you what happens on Monday. Jim's back on Monday. He'll be here with us. Man, we'll be in scrimmage week.
Yes.
Come on out tomorrow, actually.
That's right. That's tomorrow.
Be an inter-squad scrimmage, Big Oak Stadium, the brown and white game. Hopefully we'll be there.
Yeah, we're working on that. Yeah.
Everybody have a great weekend.
You've been listening to the Skinny on Sports podcast with Aaron Cowan. Be sure to hit that subscribe button to get alerts of when the latest podcast is available. Thanks for listening.